For February 11th, 2016, it's the Lullabot Podcast. Lullabot Podcast. It's the Lullabot Podcast, episode 180.
Woo!
Hey, Mike,
Woo!
How you doing? Hey, we're actually looking at each other today.
I am so relaxed right now, just looking into your deep eyes.
My deep eyes?
Are they blue?
I think so. Yeah. So we're actually face-to-face today, and that doesn't happen often.
Yeah, I know. It actually happened maybe about a week ago as you were passing through Gainesville, but other than that, yeah.
Yeah, so I don't know. To those of you who don't know, Lullabot is what we like to call a distributed company.
Yep. So everybody is everywhere, all over the U.S., Europe, Canada,
yeah.
In India.
And every once in a while, we get together in person, and this happens to be that week.
Yep. Retreat week.
Retreat week. We're here in Palm Springs, California.
Yep.
Sitting by the pool.
Yep.
Just finished a game of volleyball.
Awesome.
And, of course, we just screwed around all week, didn't we?
Yeah, pretty much. It's been amazing.
Yeah, no. We actually did some work, right? I mean, it gives us as a company a chance to talk strategy and do all that kinds of things.
You did work?
I did.
All right. Then you I did. Too.
Okay. Well, we have some people who I guarantee did some work with us today, don't we?
Okay.
Well, first, I guess, what are we talking about today?
Drupal 8 module development.
Are people actually doing that?
I hope so.
I do, too. Drupal 8's a thing now, and we're excited that we have some people with us from Lullabot who are doing some great module development work. The first guy with us is a senior developer at Lullabot. He's currently the maintainer of the Twitter OAuth devel modules, works with the D8 REST UI module. He's been on Drupal.org for over 6 years and has a bunch of Symfony experience. He's written a couple of books about Drush, which is super exciting. He lives in Madrid, Spain.
Hello, everybody. It's Wampy.
Hey, it's Wampy. No viro requena, but I think we just say Wampy.
Yeah. Actually, you like to pronounce that J.
Oh.
Can you try that?
Wampy.
Jumpy?
Jumpy.
Hey, there's another voice over there.
Yep. This person is a senior developer here at Lullabot. He is in the Drupal security team. He lives in beautiful Omaha, Nebraska with the Cornhuskers. He's been on Drupal.org for approaching 10 years now. It says 9 years and 10 months. He's the Drupal Core token system maintainer. And he is the project maintainer and lead of admin links, analytics, autocomplete username, autoload, block, 2.0, bookmark, car, disavowal, Drupal queue, domain XML sitemaps, map, elements, entity view, modes, feed burner, field formatter settings, field injector, filter allowed protocols,
flood control, Google Friend Connect, Google News sitemap, list predefined options, meta tags, aka node words, menu item visibility, module supports, module taxonomy, password change confirmation, path auto persistent state, poor man's prom popularity, protection, redirect, path redirect, remote stream wrapper, restricted content, role inheritance, settings reset button, site verification, statistics advanced settings, stumble, subpath auto, subpath URL alias, system stream wrapper, taxonomy, entity index, title field UI,
URL alter, user picture API.
Yeah, he's a project co-maintainer of administration menu, admin. admin row, Adam.
Bad behavior, coder, comment RSS, deval, examples, feeds, file entity, grab card, global redirect, logging and alerts, media elements, menu attributes, malum, open search, override node, options, real name, simple test, SSH key, token, vertical tabs, update, status, advanced settings, workbench suite, XML sitemap.
And he's also has done some other stuff.
Well, I think you missed a few. He's done some novelty modules. They're my favorite. Oh. The Dead to Demi module, the go-to module, the Inception module, Canabi code module, my favorite.
Yeah, and I believe he also wrote a Drupal module explicitly for the purpose of keeping track the number of modules he has written. And he also likes cats. I present to you Dave Reed.
Hi, everyone. The best thing is, I think that list is horribly out of date.
So are you saying there's more?
So I think we might need to redo that, yeah.
No, I don't think I could do that.
Well, we could, I suppose, if we try. With us today, so we also have a third guest here. Hey, having all of Lullabot here together, we might as well get some extra voices on the podcast. We have a senior Drupal architect on Lullabot. He's from Guelph, Ontario, Canada. He's been working with Drupal 8 with clients right now with Lullabot. In Drupal 7, he's the S3 module maintainer, a composer module maintainer. He's the creator of the trusty LAMP and easy-to-use Vagrant base box that's on GitHub that has everything you need for debugging and profiling. He's been on the podcast before. It's Andrew Berry.
Woo! And he also has a novelty Twitter account, fam.
That's right. Andrew Berry can do anything.
Yep.
So, hey, we're talking Drupal 8. We're talking Drupal 8 modules. You know, it's been implied when we've talked on the podcast before that there are some holes in Contrib, right? So I'm glad a lot of this stuff's getting done.
Yeah, like I was hoping that instead of like hanging out by the pools, you guys would be working the whole time.
Laptops aren't very conducive in the pool, so maybe like we need to get the pool float laptop.
I just saw a laptop take a splash like not 15 minutes ago.
Oh.
Yeah. I think we're okay, though.
So let's get into some of the actual content here. There's a lot of difference between code styles between Drupal 7 and Drupal 8. What's to get a baseline, what's everybody's experience before you started working with Drupal? So let's start with Wampy.
You mean before?
Before Drupal, yeah. What kinds of things did
Drupal,
you do?
Before Drupal, I was a Symfony developer. It was Symfony 1 by that time. And I've got a tweet that I come back several times where I say, it was a few years ago, and I say, starting with Drupal, the code is horrible, but the community is pretty cool. And here I am.
so you came from the community even though the code... No, I'm kidding. So Dave, your pre-Drupal experience is what kind of stuff?
Pre-Drupal experience, I originally was, you know, in the camp of writing your own CMS for a personal blog. Eventually moved to WordPress, tried evaluating Joomla, stopped using Joomla, became a WordPress extension developer, and then like Drupal was starting to come out popular in that time, and I was like trying to figure out what other CMSs I could write plugins for the same thing, and like I started playing with Drupal, and I actually really loved the code. It made a lot of sense to me. I don't know, like... It made a lot more sense, and I could figure things out. I could easily follow flow. I don't know. I was the very much procedural developer. Yeah.
Andrew Berry, where do you come down on that?
Yeah. So before Drupal, you know, I did the usual like computer science programming languages thing, which means like a lot of Java that is not taught in the way Java should actually be written. So that was fun to unlearn. And then you know Python, a bit of C, that kind of stuff. So like I didn't like start out even wanting to do web stuff, but I ended up as the website, we called them, you know, the webmaster of the student union at the university I was at, and I inherited this awesome website that was, you know, had CSS, which was like a thing at that time. Ooh. And they changed their phone number, and the entire site was built with server-side HTML includes, and the previous developer forgot to make the footer a component that you included on its own thing. So I had to update 350 pages to get the phone number updated in the footer on the website, like literal like HTML files. And I was like, there's got to be a better way. And I sort of, you know, wandered through the free CMSs out there and landed on Drupal because it was like it wasn't the code, but the APIs, like the way the modules, you could extend it fairly easily and so on. Like that was really, really attractive. So I've been sucked in. Haven't left since.
Well, sounds like you have a lot of experience editing lots of files, so I'm glad you're working on Drupal 8 now. So, Wampy, you've been working with several modules, getting them ported to Drupal 8. Fairly important modules, right? We're actually in a contract with Acquia, right, to help port some of those Drupal 8 modules. What are you working on?
So, I started with MetaTag.
MetaTag? Nobody uses the MetaTag module.
And the thing is that MetaTag module is one of the maintainers is Dave, so I went to Dave and said, Dave, why don't you tell me what do I have to do and I'll just do it, and you give me just some advice. So we did it. It worked out pretty well. We added the user interface so you can set meta tags in the admin side because that was the bit that was missing in the current port for Drupal 8, so that's in. And that's working. It pretty much works like the Drupal 7 version. Then from MetaTag, we moved on to Path Auto. Path Auto was in GitHub.
Path Auto?
Yep.
That didn't make it to core?
No.
Everybody uses Path Auto.
A little bit of it got to core, but yeah. all the UI that allows you to set patterns for taxonomies and content types and then to do bulk update and bulk deletion of patterns, then that's the bit that didn't get in. That was in GitHub. So we did some work on it. We had tests, and then we got back to... This process was led by Sasha Grossenbacher, aka Birdier.
I don't think Mike can pronounce that name.
Could you try?
Birder.
All right.
Yeah. By the way, shout out to Birder because he's doing an amazing job with some of his modules. So. Yes. So very, very committed. So thanks, Birder. We moved that. Dave had a look at it, made Birder a committer of the module, and now Path Auto, it has an alpha version, and we are looking forward for the beta in Drupal.org.
You're doing some important work there. I mean, meta tag,
it's
Path
fun.
Auto.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
They're both really great, I mean, modules that Drupal 8 sites are going
to
need.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. The thing is that there is more. From there, we moved on to token module. Token module was pretty much stable. We just needed some help with multilingual tokens. There's still more stuff to do there, but it's getting there, and it's already in Drupal.org. From token, we moved to field collection. We still have field collection in Drupal 8, and I was hoping that the developer experience was going to be less tricky than in 7. We still have to deal with arrays. The 8.x branch is still tricky, but Tim Plunkett is working on a much simpler way on the next branch to do things. So we should get an upgrade soon on this module. But it's working now. It's in 8 as well. And then finally, the one I'm working right now is redirect module.
Cool.
Nice.
Oh, and there was Workbench moderation as well on the way with Larry Garfield. By the way, Workbench moderation, it's a really good example to see how you could write a module in Drupal 8 because the .module file is very, very, very simple. It's calling all the time services. So it implements a hook, 2 lines, calls a service, that's it.
That was Workbench moderation, right?
Correct.
Yeah. It's like you're picking out all these, you know, important big projects. So it's great to see that work being done.
Yeah.
So Dave, with your module list there that we can say again if you want me to, but what's your been experience so far in working with Drupal 8 and porting modules to Drupal 8?
My experience with Drupal 8, I've been more involved earlier in the Drupal 8 development cycle, and last year quite a bit involved with some of the Drupal media modules and getting some of them going, like the embed, entity embed, URL embed, also being involved with Google Summer of Code as a mentor, so that was pretty fun. And I guess kind of things petered off because, I don't know, I haven't had as much time to work on Drupal 8. You know, I kind of have a family and 2 kids.
And cats.
And cats, 3 cats, which is its own little stress.
Amazing
and
how priorities change, huh?
Amazing how priorities change, yeah. Yeah. I'd rather play with cats than play with Drupal, yeah.
And the kids, too.
I guess the kids, too. Okay. All right. Yeah, so, like, it's kind of had to back off and just kind of readjust priorities. I don't know. It's been a tough journey, I think, a little bit. I've had to kind of learn how to trust and give up control a little bit. And I know that some others in the Drupal community have had to deal with that in the past. Mm-hmm. And I know it was kind of coming for me, and I don't know, it's a hard experience to do. Yeah.
Andrew Barry, you've been doing some Drupal 8 work. Can you explain what that is with Lullabot clients?
Yeah, it's a lot of looking at just the state of the Drupal 8 modules and, you know, just thinking like last week, the two I was looking into was diff module, which if you're not familiar with it, just basically lets you compare revisions of content really easily so you can figure out what changed. It's super useful for editorial users. And a lot of these modules have had ports in some various state of progress, but they might not have had any commits, say, since September, which means it could be totally working and done, or it could mean that it's like literally nothing but like a couple classes. So a lot of that has been sort of working with clients, especially with some of our clients they're new Drupal users, right? So it's not like you know, those of us at Lullabot who have a really clear understanding of how to port a module. And so figuring out where a new contributor can really integrate themselves with the Drupal community has been a lot of our focus. You know, one of the other modules actually I've looked at that I've been really excited about is you mentioned in your intro the Amazon S3 module for Drupal 7. And, you know, as the maintainer for that, I had to figure, well, what am I going to do for getting that to Drupal 8? And there's already this great module called Fly System, which is named after a library for just PHP systems called Fly System, which lets you use Amazon S3 and Azure and FTP and all these other storage backends. And I'm looking at it, and I'm just like, hey, I don't even need to port my code. I can just, you know, there's some work to do to sort of get all the features there. But, like, honestly, like, it's been really exciting to see some people, like, they're not just doing, like, oh, let's just port the modules one-to-one. They're looking to see, you know, what are the ways that we can actually have to port less and get more. And figuring out, like, with our clients where they can make those decisions is a lot of the effort that we end up putting in right now.
Dave and Wampy and Andrew, you guys all do client work for Lullabot. How does that affect working in Contrib? Dave, you start.
Oh, I love this question. so I kind of always like to reflect, like, if I would like to be doing client work or like to be doing core development, and I love a mix of both because I find it so interesting that client work really helps inform the real-world use cases, real-world performance use cases, and that helps inform module development and making things better and adapting for the real world, I guess. I don't know.
You mean code's actually written for people who use it?
Do you have any times you can remember where that like actually affected, like stories that you can tell or anything like that?
Well, like I can give a good example of something that I would love to change right now. Yeah. With the PathAuto module, it typically writes the URL alias for the content or whatever you're saving when you save it. And an interesting thing that it does is with taxonomies, when you update one term, it'll try and update all the children terms. And so if you have a large taxonomy with lots of children relationships, it becomes like it's trying to update, you know, 1,000, 20,000 terms all in one process. So, like, I didn't ever consider that before when I was thinking of adding this into the module. And now, like, I'm all about using the queue system in Drupal and putting stuff into queues at all possible and letting things just, you know, put it in the queue, pop it in there, and let cron process it when it wants to. So, yeah.
Cool. Andrew or Wampy, what are your thoughts on that? Do you have any stories where client work has affected your decisions when you're creating modules?
I think Wampy's kind of cheating now since his client is port this to Drupal 8.
Yeah. I mean, my situation is it's a bit special now because this is something I do in my free time to study. This is what I call study. Like when I tell friends or my girlfriend, yeah, I'm going to study. What I mean is I'm going to go to Drupal.org and check out modules and issues and learn new things. And now I'm doing this on full time.
Awesome.
But I can't wait to get onto a project with Drupal 8 because it's going to be so much fun.
Andrew, you've been a part of that fun for a little bit, right?
Yeah. So something actually that's come up recently with client work is like dealing with, like, you install the module and you look at how it works, but there's a lot of Drupal 8 modules right now that are totally functional and you can build a site with, but the user interface is still rough. And that totally makes sense. You want to make sure, like, the underlying code works before you, like, start building things on top of that. And, there was one example where you were using the Entity Queues module, which lets you do lists of content.
Queues.
Yeah, and this is different from the queues that David was talking about earlier, where it's about lists of content, not lists of jobs to do later. And it gets confusing because we use the word queue everywhere.
Is that like the, what's the old school?
Node queue.
Node queue.
Yeah, there's node queue. There was queues, like Q-U-E-U-E-S in Drupal 7 Eric Duran did.
There's too much of a British influence on Drupal, in my opinion, with all these queues.
Join the far queue.
But to get to the point of that was like, the entire UI for that right now is like in the structure section of the admin side of things. And, you know, working with a client, they're like, well, we don't want our editors to be going into the site structure. Like, you know, and so like that's not something I would have ever thought until I put it in front of, you know, a real sort of end user. So that side of it has been, you know, a lot of fun and a really good learning experience.
So guys, one thing that I've heard with Drupal 7 or Drupal 8 rather, module development, is you've got to be using that IDE. Like, I don't know how you do it without an IDE. Wampy, you've given a talk about developing within Vim, right? You use Vim? You're a Vim user?
Yeah.
With lots of plugins or just
Yeah, no. The funny thing side of it is that with Drupal 7, I got a friend of mine, Mateo Aguilo, he's staring at me like, oh, guy.
Yeah. he's actually standing here watching us. He didn't want to.
Yeah. He's not, but he's giving me a look now. So I use Vim with a bunch of plugins. And it's funny how when I started doing Drupal 8 full time, I realized I needed something more because there are many files you need to edit. There are many things you need to search. So I had to install new things, new plugins, and learn more about Vim so I could be efficient because I didn't want to stop using it because everybody else is using PHP Storm, which is great, I admit it, but I just love Vim. Yep.
So if someone is an active Vim user and they want to do D8 module development, where do they start?
I would suggest them to have a look at my slides.
Where do they find those?
On my GitHub account, JuanPNR.
Okay, we'll put this in the links in the show notes.
So there's a link there. And basically, I recorded a few clips with the list of plugins I'm using and how do they work. So I think that would be the easiest.
Cool.
Dave Reed, you're a prolific coder. Tell me, what do you use?
I use a computer.
Oh, well, yeah.
Oh, IDE.
There's software page on that computer that you, like, put letters into.
Yeah, okay. Well, it's interesting because there's a Drupal Association deal with the PHP Storm creators that they would give the top 50 contributors to D7 or D8 or the top 50 modules a free license. And so I kind of was like, all right, I'll try that. PHP Storm, yes. So I gave it a try, and I've been using that for a couple years now. But they recently had some little software licensing change.
Yep.
It's more of a subscription model that just, as an open source advocate, I don't feel comfortable using as much anymore. So I'm going to see, maybe reevaluate that. But definitely, my experience with Drupal 8 has been much better using PHP Storm than compared to anything else, yeah.
Have you found any other things that you've been poking around with?
The other one I fall back on is Komodo IDE by ActiveState.
Yeah.
Because they do have an open source version, but there's a paid version that has a lot more features, and I tend to use that one.
I used Komodo IDE probably a couple of versions ago, and you know, a Komodo edit is really how I got started. And for a long time, it was I just need linting and function completion, and I'm happy. But obviously now with
need a little bit more now.
Yeah, a little bit.
So do you have any tips as far as PHP Storm or Komodo or anything like that that people might find helpful?
With PHP Storm, it really does a lot out of the box, especially if it has built-in Drupal support. And it kind of recognizes, once you open a Drupal directory, it's like, hey, would you like to enable Drupal support? And it's really nice for that.
And do you say yes? Because I've always said no because it says something about a Drupal module. And to me, it was like, I'm not working on a module. I'm working on a Drupal site. So
maybe it's the same thing.
I don't know. Like, I never trusted it. I'm like, I guess I never trusted that an IDE company would know what they were doing.
Yeah, so, it's a little, the UI is a little rough on that. But, what they're basically assuming is that you might have a module project separate from your Drupal install. You might have one.
Dave
extract.
Might have that 75 times or so, right?
Right.
I have one giant project that's my Drupal core with all.
You still have a CVS checkout,
out.
Don't you?
I do somewhere, yes, that's for sure. Back in the days of CVS when you could check out the entire contrib directory, that was awesome. I loved it.
So the trick, though, is to just, you can actually point it at the root of your giant Drupal install, even if that is your project, and then it all just works. So it's kind of rough to realize that, but it does do what you expect it to do.
The root of the Drupal install, or sometimes the web root of the Git directory is one up or something, right?
Yeah, you want the folder with index.php, if I remember right.
Okay.
And it's not required. I think the last project I set up, I don't think I actually had to do that.
Yeah.
Yeah, I didn't either.
I'm a PHP Storm user, but I don't think I'm actually getting the full use out of it. I still want my linting and my function completion, and then I can look up and, look at parent classes and use the debugger. But I feel like I could be doing so much more. Maybe if I had Vim or something, Wompy.
Now that you mentioned debugger, the best tip I can give to somebody is learn how to use the debugger, because in Drupal 8 you are lost without being able to debug, not just to find bugs, but also to understand how a flow works. Like being able to set up breakpoints and see the code flow, it's critical for Drupal 8.
What? So, I can't keep using DPM everywhere? I can't?
And actually it doesn't work, right? In some cases.
Oh, it blows up because there's this recursive thing of classes. Yeah.
Kent.
You
Kint is the new output Kint. Style.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yes.
K-I-N-T is the function called.
So if someone wants to learn how to debug in DA, what are some resources where they can go to learn how to do that?
Well, PHP Storm. Anybody else wants to?
I actually think there's a couple of Lullabot articles by Angus Mack about setting up PHP Storm.
Yeah.
I think they're probably a version or two behind on PHP Storm. That said, the basics are still the same.
They're identical. They actually haven't changed in the last several releases of PHP Storm, which is really nice. And I've actually come at the same conclusion, but a different path, where I now no longer use the devel module in DPM, even on Drupal 7 sites, because debugging is so easy to set up and run. I used to do the vdebug with Vim and all that, and it was it was just a little it was hard enough to get going that I didn't use it all the time, and therefore it wasn't something I used a lot. I only used it when things were really blowing up. And now it seems like most of the system, maybe the if you follow Wampy's slides, I bet they tell you how to use Vim in a way so that's easier for debugging than it was when I used it. But it's actually an easier way to learn than just dumping stuff to the screen and trying to understand what it's about.
And there are some great Drupalize Me free videos on PHP Storm and figuring out debugging, not just debugging in Drupal, but also JavaScript too.
Yeah, Drupalize Me has, I think, a whole series on that type of stuff. Yep. And a lot of it's integrated with Symfony, I believe.
Well, on that note, Drupalize Me, sponsor of the show.
Did you like that segue that I just planted in there?
We're going to hear from them just in a second now. We're at the Lullabot retreat. We've got 5 Lullabots around the table and a couple others giving us a hairy eyeball on the other side of the room.
A lot more over at the pool.
And a lot more over at the pool. We're at the Lullabot retreat in Southern California, getting to see each other face-to-face.
Yeah, it's pretty
awesome.
And
we'll get more into Drupal 8 module development coming up right after this. Hey, Andrew Wilson.
Hey, Matt.
Did you get a little sunburnt today?
Do I look like I got a little sunburned?
No, I'm just kidding with you. So Drupalize Me, you guys have been together here at the Lullabot Retreat as well. The Lullabot education folks have been looking at the future of Lullabot education and Drupalize Me.
We are. We're thinking about Drupal 8. We're thinking about the fact that we're a new company starting January 1. And
you mean Lullabot Education, right? It's its own thing.
Lullabot
right?
Education, our new parent company, our new holding company. And
we still love you, though.
Thank you. We appreciate that. but Drupal 8 is the number one thing on our minds for sure. We've been working on a little theming series that's on its way. Hopefully everyone is excited about that and looking forward to that, and a little Migrate series as well for, of course, Drupal 8.
Migrate, super important. If you've got a Drupal 7 site, maybe a Drupal 6 site, getting that data to Drupal 8, Migrate's the way to go.
We think it will be a big hit.
How does somebody find out about Drupalize Me? And what is it? There's a website, right? Drupalize.me?
Wait, there are people that don't know about Drupalize Me?
Maybe.
What? No, you can find us on the training page at Drupal.org, of course, when you search for Drupal training. But you can just go to Drupalize.me, and you can find us there.
And you have memberships, and people can sign up and do all kinds of things?
We do. Organization memberships, which we like to push. Don't pay for those yourself. Get your employer to pay, and sign up your whole team.
Oh, all right. I'm off away from the pool, back at the podcast. I am here with Mr. Dave Reed, Matt Cleave, Wampy NR, and Andrew Barry.
Mike, you have a wicked spike on the sand volleyball court.
Yeah, I'm pretty awesome. Hey, you guys don't know that. You look at me and you think, there's no way this guy knows how to play volleyball. And then I get out there and
then we realized you really don't know how to play volleyball.
but I do like your whole body deflection.
Yeah, I have this thing where I instead of hitting with my hands, I usually hit with my shoulder, and it goes the way I want it to.
Use what's available.
Yeah. So it works.
I think that's probably the problem with getting a bunch of Drupal developers trying to do something athletic.
We're we should be playing the Yakety Sax song as we're out there doing this stuff.
We're really good at typing.
Yep. All right, let's get back into it. Symfony.
What's Symfony?
Symfony.
We're talking Drupal 8.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. So Drupal 8 contains various Symfony components. And so my question to you is, do you need to know Symfony? Does it help to know Symfony? How does it compare working? Let's start with Andrew Barry.
Yeah, so, the easy answers are, does it help? Sure. Do you need to? Absolutely not. I would say, through the, you know, the work I've been doing with Drupal 8, you know, both with like core patches, you know, to Drupal 8 and, you know, the contrib module work we've been doing, like the biggest exposure to the Symfony things are when you're like, hey, I want to know if there's a class that handles reading and writing JSON objects, or I want to deal with writing YAML or reading YAML, those sorts of things. And you're looking to see, okay, what classes have the word YAML in them? And it just because it's, you know, some of them might be in the Symfony namespace and some of them might be in the Drupal namespace. And realistically, like, it's not like you're knowing Symfony. It's just, it's called, it's, you know, from Symfony.
It's right? it's just something that ships with core, right?
Right.
So, if I go to api.drupal.org, do I find the Symfony?
Yeah, you do.
You do, yeah.
Yeah.
Which is great. So, like, you know, obviously it's sort of, you know, there's going to be someone who's done a lot of work with Symfony is going to just know what exists and what's available.
And the same goes for a Drupal developer.
Exactly.
Right?
Yeah. So, like, you're kind of going to end up at the end of this, like, you know, if you're a Symfony developer, you're going to know Drupal by working against Drupal. And if you're a Drupal developer, you're going to know Symfony a bit just naturally by working against Drupal. And your skills are going to expand in both directions.
Dave, are you on the same side of that?
Yeah, I think so. It's really good for, like, the low-level stuff. And from an API basis, I found it really interesting that, you know, when we first started talking about Symfony and Drupal 8, it was like, we're going to be able to replace everything in Drupal with Symfony stuff. And it didn't exactly turn out that way. Like, we ended up having to kind of wrap a lot of Symfony stuff to figure out how to do it the Drupal way.
Eaton just walked in the room and gave a woo. And
thanks, Jeff.
Something
Eaton.
I've heard him say before is, this is Jeff Eaton, architect at Lullabot.
Hey there.
You know, he was the small core advocate, you know, 7 years ago or something. And he says small core is Symfony, so...
That's probably...
Yeah, I mean, the joke at the time, there was a big heated debate over whether or not Drupal should continue to grow in a product-like fashion into something that you could put in front of a site builder and they could click together all the functionality, or whether it should focus on API-level components that you could click together and build stuff on top of. And the running joke was always that although small core, quote-unquote, didn't win out as what Drupal should become, we put Symfony in Drupal, and that's the philosophy behind Symfony. So it played out in interesting ways.
I knew you couldn't resist, you know, when I said the Lullabot podcast was happening, and, you know, I figured we'd see Eaton walk by.
Well, if he walks into any room that has a microphone, yeah.
We'll have to have him on sometime to talk his, you know, content strategy or you know, working with clients. Wampy, you come at it from a different angle, though. You had Symfony experience before Drupal experience.
And I felt very lost.
In Symfony or Drupal?
In Drupal. When I started with Drupal, it was Drupal 6 turning into Drupal 7, and I started helping on 7, and I could read patches and understand them because it was just new functions with different functions names, basically. But then when 8 was 3 years or more starting to happen, and I started to work, help on it, and so I thought, okay, I'm going to do it as from 6 to 7, I'm going to read patches and help. I didn't understand anything. Like, things changed a lot from Symfony 1 to 2. So myself, I bucked up. I read the Symfony book. If you go to symfony.org, you can find the book there. The Symfony book is open there. You can read it. It's a PDF download as well.
And equivalent to something like Gitbook, where all of the data is there,
exactly,
and it's on the website.
Exactly.
It's not like you actually have to buy dead trees.
No, yeah. Not at all. So I read the whole book. I cached up in a few things. There are a few things that changed from Symfony 1 to Symfony 2. And then when I went back to these patches, I could understand more of it, and I could be helpful. So it helps. I highly encourage you to read the Symfony book for this stuff.
Cool. So as I was sitting here earlier, Mateo snuck up behind me, grabbed my computer, and typed a question in here. So this question comes from Mateo.
Maybe Mateo should ask the question.
Yeah, do you want to ask the question, Mateo?
This is Mateo Bosch. He's also a Lullabot, a senior developer from Spain. So, Mateo, what's your question?
Hey, guys. You tricked me into participating into this.
Maybe just a little bit. How come you didn't play volleyball today?
I was playing soccer. Or actual football.
Not real football.
Says the Cornhusker fan.
Well, my question was more thinking about Composer, and I know that there has been some heated debate about if we need to build websites in Drupal 8 using exclusively Composer, how that affects to shared hostings, etc. But I guess my question is more related to content modules and how do you use Composer effectively to ease the process of building a Drupal website.
So, Composer, Dave Reed?
Yeah, so, I mean, there's an interesting project, I think it's called, like, the Drupal Composer. Like, there's a GitHub project that's, like, trying to figure out the scaffolding of building a whole Drupal project. And that's an interesting take. I still like, a lot of people like using Git submodules to bring everything together. I'm still just a huge fan of, like, adding stuff to the Composer file, downloading, and then committing that code to the repo. So, like, you have everything in the one repo. I don't know. I'm an old-time fan of that.
Get off my lawn.
Yeah. So, something interesting about Composer with contrib modules, it looks like Drupal.org might be kind of used as a wrapper. There's a service called Packagist that you use to download all the Composer libraries and that kind of thing. But right now, there's not all the Drupal modules available via Packagist. So it looks like Drupal.org might actually provide its own version of Packagist.
And before we get too far, I think, Dave, we kind of put the cart before the horse. Explain exactly how you might use Composer when you're building a module.
It's a great way that you register all your external dependencies in a composer.json file.
It's kind of like a PHP drush make.
A better drush make, yes.
A better drush make?
A more modern drush make.
And you were saying you like the code in the repo after Composer's already run.
Yeah, I like having all the modules there. It's like committing your lock files for stuff, like your NPM lock files or all your Bower, JSON, gulp, grunt stuff.
I don't have any experience with either way, so I think what you're saying makes sense based on my experience with drush make. Because if I have to get bisect something after I run into some kind of problem, I don't have to rebuild the full make file. Like drush make, that was kind of a pain in the butt for me. I don't know if Andrew.
So one of the nice things about Composer, which I really like, is that you have a file called composer.json where you specify sort of fairly loosely what dependencies you want. Like you're going to say, if you're using it to build your whole website, you're going to say, hey, I want Drupal 8. And I don't really care whether it's 8.02 or 8.0.2 or 8.0.3. I just want to make sure that, you know, I get the newest. But then what it does is when you run Composer update, it basically takes those loose version definitions and then whatever's current as of the time when you run that command, it downloads those versions and puts them all in the right spot. And then it writes all that metadata, including like where it got the files from, the hashes of things that it's downloading, the upstream URLs, like all that stuff to a file called composer.lock. And that actually has like the literal version numbers that you are working with. And so whenever you run Composer install, it's never going to change your dependencies. And so you always commit that lock file for like site builds. So I was actually just dealing with this last week because I was debugging something, and we had upgraded from Drupal to the latest point release of Drupal 8 and some contrib modules and all that, and I had to bisect to deal with it. And in the past, like with other systems, it's exactly what Dave is talking about, where like if you don't have that code, it's a real pain. I ended up sticking a one-line post-checkout hook in the .git folder, which basically just says composer install. So then when it does bisect, every time it goes to a different commit, it just runs install. And unlike the update process or maybe drush make or something, like composer install is stupid fast. Like,
yeah, that's kind of my big issue is like it took forever. So if it's fast, that's awesome.
It basically caches everything locally. And so that way, as long as you've already done the download, you know, it's as fast as your computer. And even if you haven't done the download, like if I, you know, commit an update to composer.lock and then Matt, you download it to, you know, work on it, you're not going through that slow update process. You just say composer install. And it doesn't have to do all that dependency resolution logic and figuring out what versions are available and all that. So it is obviously like it's more complicated than just dumping everything in the repository and committing it. But, you know, there are advantages to the new method. And, like, in the Composer world, like, they explicitly tell you don't commit vendor, which is, like, kind of against how a lot of Drupal sites have been. And, yeah.
Don't do the Dave Reed method? Is that what's...
I don't know. I've done the Dave Reed method, and I've been really happy with it on other projects.
Okay.
But these days, I tend to do that less with the Drupal 8 stuff.
So the answer is it depends?
Yeah, like everything.
Wumpy, composer, yes or no? What do you think?
I'm with Dave Reed.
Yeah?
I commit everything, yeah. There have been cases where we haven't done it, but I have this feeling where once, for example, let's say you have a staging or development environment and you have everything there, I like to feel that whatever we have there, exactly the same thing is going to go to production. The feeling of having a process that transforms that during deployment, right before deployment, it builds the CSS, the SAS into CSS and downloads stuff. So what if something fails and what if your process to fix that doesn't work? No, I don't really like that. So I'm with Dave.
Yeah, I remember when GitHub was under DDoS attacks, you know, what about like all these NPM and package.json files and everything that's reached out to GitHub? If you're in a deploy process and GitHub is going down because, I don't know, some type of stupid-ass teenage hacker, you know, what are you going to do?
Or China.
Either yeah, way, whatever. Like, it always happens at the worst possible moment, it seems, right?
Yeah, that's actually something we've had a lot of discussions with some of our clients because you know, we've all gone through times, even when Drush Make would break. I remember there was one time when, like, the categories of modules changed. I think they were uppercase to the first letter or something like that, and then Drush Make just couldn't download for, like, a day or two. You know, now that's going way back.
Sure.
But we've got to the point where we basically, on that project, aren't recommending that they use Git to do deployments anymore. And the hand was kind of forced by the front-end world, where they need to do all this SAS compiling and JavaScript thingies. And I don't pay a lot of attention to all that. But we now sort of go with a like build and archive model. So you build an archive, like a zip or a tarball, of all the compiled stuff with vendors and your SAS and whatever, you know, compile everything into a zip file. And then you deploy that out to your servers with rsync or whatever. So that way when you're like, hey, I need to go back to exactly what was on a server 2 weeks ago and I'm on an airplane and don't have internet, you know, you at least have something which is literally like that compiled artifact. And then you can do cool things like you can sign it with GPG and you can hash things to verify, you know, during deployments, which I get you get a lot of that with Git too, but I feel like Git as a deployment mechanism for Drupal sites is going to be less and less viable over the next few years.
So maybe to bring it back on track with contributed module development, you know, typically you have an info file in Drupal 7, you have an info.yaml file in Drupal 8, and you still kind of define your dependencies there, like your inter-module dependencies in the info.yaml. There's not really a best practice whether if you should do those in the composer.json file yet. We're still working that out.
For example, something like PathAuto would rely on tokens.
Yes, PathAuto relies on tokens. So that's defined in the info.yaml file right now. That's kind of where everything reads from, especially like the Drupal.org testing system. It reads from that. And one of the interesting things to note is if your contributed module relies on an external dependency, not from Drupal.org, right now that testing system doesn't work for you. It doesn't read and parse and download that stuff from composer.json. So. It's one of the downsides, but people are working on it right now.
But you just smiled and laughed.
Yes, because I talked about this with Andrew Berry.
And that's the best part of actually getting together in person is
oh yeah, because
conversations
he looked at
around me. The campfire. Like I noticed Andrew and Eaton were like both hand-waving and flailing all night long around the campfire. So it's actually cool when we get the chance to be across from the table and have these discussions.
There was a funny situation with the auth module because I decided to use the Peckle library for OAuth because this is OAuth 1 and protocol and it was the most standard thing I could find for. But the thing is that even though I activated automated tests to run when you submit a patch for the OAuth module, they fail because the test bot is not able to install Peckle OAuth library and that's why it fails. So yes.
So hey, like I've seen a lot of development done on GitHub. Is that a thing now?
You know, we talked to Nate and Jen, and that's apparently the backdrop way of doing things.
Yeah.
So GitHub, are we using GitHub now?
Yeah. Wasn't PathAuto done on GitHub?
Yeah. So a lot of the, I guess, there were some Drupal 8 module ports that happened on Drupal.org. Some people that the maintainers didn't have the time, I'm not looking at anyone in particular but myself, didn't actually have the time to port. And so some people took to GitHub to do that and kind of, you know, went from there. it kind of ties into a little bit of like the external dependencies things, because if you do your development on GitHub, you can use an excellent testing service called Travis CI, which can actually download your external dependencies and run tests and everything. So, in my ideal world, like, we'd love to have everything come back to Drupal.org, and that's what I've been trying to do with, you know, Token and PathAuto, just kind of give it a quick review, merge it back to Drupal.org, and, you know, grant someone access to commit, and kind of bring things back. Because I think everyone in the Drupal community wants to see things happen on Drupal.org, if at all possible.
I think there's a whole lot of strength of having all the modules on Drupal.org.
Yeah, absolutely.
But it seems like a bunch of developers are finding that, hey, man, I do all my work on GitHub anyway, so we might as well put modules on GitHub.
The pull requests are nice.
This is a topic for another podcast here.
Okay. Wampy, GitHub, you like it?
I do like it for client work. I love it.
Module development, do you think it belongs on GitHub?
No. No, and the main reason of it is that when you see long issues, not just in country but also in core, I love when everybody works over a patch. Like, you see the patch evolving and growing, and there's a discussion around it, and many people can participate there. While in GitHub with pull requests, there are workarounds, but I haven't seen anything that made me feel like, yes, there is an alternative. There isn't. At least I couldn't find it.
Yeah, go ahead, Ann. Yeah.
It's a very low barrier. Like, grab someone else's patch, apply it, tweak it around, and create another diff and upload that patch to Drupal.org. With GitHub, you have to, like, find the correct fork and then fork their fork and submit a pull request to them, or you submit a combined pull request back to the original project. It gets very, like, spaghetti messy.
Yeah. Andrew, thoughts?
Yeah. We ran into this with the Drupal 7 Amazon S3 module. And we actually are sort of doing a hybrid model, because you need to have stuff on Drupal.org anyways if you want releases and update notifications and all that kind of stuff. It's just, you got to do it there. And the issue queues, I feel like, are much better on Drupal.org, because you've got, more filtering and planning or tools and so on. But what we actually do is we say, basically, as soon as you need to write code, which needs to be automatically tested for the PHP unit side of that module, go over to GitHub and just open the pull request there, which is actually similar to a lot of the GitHub things right now, where it's like you file an issue and then you open a separate pull request. So it's just basically that we're ignoring the issues component for the most part on GitHub. And it's not optimal. I'd be a lot happier if I could do everything on Drupal.org and maybe also have something pull request-ish on Drupal.org, but it works well the way it is now.
Mateo has stepped in. He stood here and he said like one question, but he cannot hold himself. You know, 15 minutes ago by the swimming pool, I said, Mateo, are you in or out? He said, I'm out.
Well, I was in the swimming pool, in my defense. No, I think that I should offer the different point of view. I've been maintaining different modules in GitHub because for me, Drupal.org works really well for core development and for modules that receive a lot of patches from different contributors. And having a very active conversation with multiple actors, that is really great. That's where Drupal.org shines. But when you're working on your own, maybe with another maintainer and a couple of people that come from time to time to offer their help, I think that GitHub is really cool, because it allows you to do things like Travis integrations. It's a very low barrier, because I kind of disagree on the fact that downloading a patch and applying it and submitting a new version is a low barrier. I think that just being able to have the div visually and doing these reviews kind of helps, and it is for module maintenance.
This stuff is hard. How are you learning this, Dave Reed?
I was just going to say, I like Bitbucket more than GitHub anyway.
Oh.
Boom!
Atlassian.
How's what going?
Learning.
How's learning going?
How are you doing that?
I don't know. I'm very much in a learn-by-example kind of person. I like studying existing code, figuring out how it works, playing through it, tweaking it, changing it. Like, I'm very much not the classical learning. I would love to read the Symphony book, but I don't think I would learn from that as well.
We can't all be wompy.
I know.
That's something I did three years ago. Nowadays, I find myself reading a lot of interfaces.
Yeah, interfaces are
great.
A lot.
They are so well documented.
Interfaces being like the PHP almost like a subclass. I don't know how to explain
it. It's like how this thing should work.
This is how a class should be.
Yeah,
should work.
Yeah, and actually you go to the actual class that uses interface and it has nothing. It has something that says inherit doc. And it shouldn't. If I use PHP Storm, it should actually show the doc block, but I don't have the plugin in Vim.
Oh, he doesn't have the Vim plugin. So Vim for the loss.
I'll find it.
On this
hey,
example,
if you know a plugin for that, let me know about it.
Andrew, how do you learn this stuff?
Yeah, I mean, I'm still blown away because I don't have that plugin on PHP Storm, and now I'm like, oh, God. Like, when you're hitting, like, you know, command U to go, like, up the interface tree to find those docs. Oh, my gosh, I'm so excited. So I totally agree about the interfaces, and why I like reading through them is because they're about what the thing should do, not the guts of how it does it. And that's where so much of the complexity in what Drupal does is, and it's great to just have, like, I can totally ignore that. I don't have to read it unless I want to. And I've actually spent a lot of time, I would say when you open a class like and you look at the top at the like the at file, not the at file, the at class comments, like there's a lot of great information in there. Like, you know, all these examples online about like controller base for using it as your like where your menu callbacks basically end up with. There's some great information about how to do unit testing with that in that file block. And in Drupal 7, we had some of that, but it just wasn't – I wasn't as consistently amazed and like what I was learning just from being right there. So, don't be afraid to like just dive into like the Drupal 8 code, even just as a module maintainer, because it's really good at teaching.
You're saying read code.
Read comments. Like it's not like even the interface is like you get more out of the comments describing what a method is supposed to do than probably the method signature itself.
Read code, read comments. Probably when you write code you should probably write some comments too. Yeah.
Yeah, I would appreciate that.
Awesome. Well, hey, it's getting noisy in here. I think we're gonna get the hook. Got our next retreat activity. The whole group is getting together. So Wampy, where can somebody get a hold of you? You're on Twitter.
WampyNR. That's my Twitter account.
WampyNR.
Yeah. You have to pronounce it the math way.
Wampy. Andrew Berry, Deviant Integral. We've had you before.
Yeah, that's it. Yep. Hasn't changed.
And Andrew Berry FanPag. Oh,
Andrew Berry. The Andrew Berry so fan page. Yeah. I mean, if
yeah,
you're not.
Well, yeah, but you gotta leave the E out at the end.
Andrew Berry can do anything. Dave Reed.
Just Dave Reed everywhere. Twitter, Drupal.org, yeah.
Yeah, and when people are trying to build their Drupal 8 websites, they say, Dave Reed. Maybe Wampy can help on that website.
Yeah, I'm not sure what expression they will use with that. Yeah.
Yeah. Well, it'll be good.
Yeah.
Thanks, guys, for joining us.
Thank you.
Yeah, thanks.
Thank you, guys.
Hey, Lullabot. The room is getting full, so maybe we should get going, huh?
I guess so.